Welcome to History's Hotties, the podcast that discusses the sometimes forgotten but influential women in American history, and I am your host, Krista. As the world becomes more connected through social media, there are so many people examining how a wide distribution of information can change the climate of our world, and no doubt it can. While the internet is changing our society very quickly, this is not the first time a form of communication has shaped society, not just for the better or for the worse, but perhaps a little of both. But first, I would like to welcome our new listeners and welcome back those of you who listened a few years ago when the podcast started. I realized when I produced the podcast a few weeks ago after returning from a very long hiatus, I failed to do something very important, which is share my disclaimer. Sorry about the bump there, guys. I had to pause and sneeze. So, back to this. I love history, and while I do have a bachelor's degree in history, I do not claim to be an expert on any subject. So while I do my best to present well-researched history, feel free to send me an email at historieshotties@yahoo.com. That's historieshotties@yahoo.com. There's no apostrophe. Or visit our Facebook page by the same name and let me know if you have information to share on any subject. And now that we have that out of the way, back to our subject. Our first history's hottie, Catherine Beecher, and her ideal woman of the 19th century, educated, staying at home with her children in the private sphere, and almost working as a home economist, running a morally sound and thrifty home, were the best options for a single woman, where the best options for a single woman to earn a living was to work certain acceptable jobs like teaching, was the central topic of the ladies' magazines of the day. These magazines were a connection to the world in a time where women stayed away, not all mind you, but a lot of them, from normal activities like holiday parades, restaurants, and even going to the market, and until mid-century, spent more time finding ways to stay home than ways to communicate in public forums that might be acceptable to women of the day. One particular magazine became the stalwart of this period. The publisher of The Ideal Woman / Ways to Set Up the HGTV Dream Home, if you will, / Vogue Style Dressing and General Entertainment. It was called Goody's Ladies Book. That's G-O-D-E-Y apostrophe S, Ladies Book. Goody's brought communication from the outside world not only to the middle class homes and towns, but all the way to the isolated farmhouse where the place of a woman hadn't really changed much from the Revolutionary era. Women were writing for other women. They were earning a living with their pens and thus their minds. Nathaniel Hawthorne called them a damned mob of scribbling women. That's a quote. Nice sexism there, Nate. Which Gail Collins says probably came from the fact that women like Maria Cummins, who wrote The Lamplighter, outsold Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter pretty handily. When I first read that, I have to admit, I shared a little evil laugh with my computer. However, while many women were able to keep themselves out of poverty by writing, this developing trend of penny novels and ladies' guides did not intend to free women from the constraints of society. Goody's was a raging success, but the intent begs the question, how much did Goody's change society? Was Goody's good enough? The short lifespan of many during this period is a well-known fact, as was the idea that only certain jobs were considered acceptable for women, and that jobs where a woman could earn a wage that would allow her to support herself were rare. In fact, the revolutionary home, where there was a business of some sort in addition to a farm, and everyone pitched in on almost every job, with a more equal distribution of responsibility and recognition, was now as fashionable because there were people who had enough time to consider whether their lifestyle was fashionable. I guess this could be considered the rudimentary version of our first world problems of today. Hawthorne was not the only man who found this trend of female publishing essays, short stories, novels, and magazines annoying. Nathaniel Willis, the editor of Home Journal, went so far as to be terribly mean to his own sister when she wanted to write. So being a widow with children to support wasn't a good enough reason for some men to share their vast fortune made in publishing. Writers like Fanny Fern and Eden Southworth supported their children, and Augusta Evans kept up herself as well as her father. Which brings us to our history's hottie of the day, the editor of Goody's Ladies Book, Sarah Josepha Hale. And if I've mispronounced her name, her middle name, somebody please let me know, because I don't really know if I have that pronounced correctly. It's just basically Joseph with an A. Sarah was born in Newport, New Hampshire, in October of 1788, and was raised by parents who believed boys and girls should be educated equally. Sarah's mother instilled a real love of books in her daughter. However, we know some educational opportunities were closed to women, so while her brother Horatio went to Dartmouth, Sarah became a local teacher. She then married a lawyer named David Hale. History's Hotties does have to give a nod to big brother Horatio here. When he came home for the summer, he would tutor Sarah in the subjects he was studying, like philosophy and geography, which weren't really common subjects for girls to study at the time. So thanks for taking the time to inspire a woman who changed a moment in history, Horatio. Sarah and David got married in her father's tavern, the Rising Sun, in 1813, and proceeded to have five children. David actually continued to teach Sarah after they were married. So add French and botany to the list of subjects she was learning on a regular basis, and he encouraged her to write for a local paper, which Sarah said helped her to refine her writing skills. So again, shout out to the man who was well aware that his wife could learn -while-female, or LWF, as we will call it from here on out. They were only married for 9 years because David died in 1822. Sarah never remarried and is known for remaining in mourning for the rest of her life. So now the problem becomes clear. Sarah has no husband and five children to support, the fifth of which she was pregnant with when David died. As soon as 1823, Hale published a book of poems called The Genius of Oblivion, and then a few years later, the novel Northwood, Life, North, and South, which was also published in England as A New England Tale. She wrote poems for our children, in which we find the timeless Mary Had a Little Lamb. So if we knew nothing else about Mary, Sarah Josepha Hale, she has pretty much made an impression. I started to say Mary Had a Little Lamb there, but of course we are talking about Sarah. She is the author of a timeless poem that we still teach our children today, but this was only the beginning of her impact on the literary world. From our episode on revolutionary women, we know that literacy in females was becoming more the norm, and before the Civil War, according to Gail Collins, Harper's Magazine estimated that females made up 80% of the reading public, meaning the purchasers of reading material. Many of the magazines were borrowing a lot of their material from British magazines, which might have worked for a while, but the culture of the U.S. was becoming its own animal. While breaking into British society was quite the triumph, and the mere fact that aristocratic families in England were more than willing to embrace wealthy American girls to cover their expenses later in the 1800s is real evidence to that, but making your way in society's circles of New York was almost impossible. Also showing that the U.S. was beginning to think of itself not only as separate, but uniquely different. So Lewis Goody bought a ladies' magazine. It actually was called Ladies' Magazine. That was the original name. And invited Hale to become the editor. Hale decided that Goody's would be an original work, even if it meant she had to write a great deal of the copy herself. So what did Sarah talk about in Goody's Ladies book, and what did Sarah believe? Sarah was fairly close to Catherine Beecher in her beliefs. Again, we go back to Beecher like we normally do, which isn't surprising because Beecher often contributed to Goody's. She touted the separate sphere theory for men and women, with women occupying the sphere of morally upright home, while men went out into the morally bankrupt public sphere and believed that the goodness of women influencing their husbands was enough of a vote. However, she obviously saw the need for women to be respected for their minds and to improve themselves. She helped found Vassar College and helped make the idea of higher education for women an accepted practice, which always makes me smile when I read about women like this, since now there are more females attending college in the U.S. than men. Not male bashing by any means, just amused at the thought that it had been a common idea that women who spent too much time on their education would usurp the energy from their body needed to bear children. It's a little funny. Sarah had a great deal of influence over the fashions of the day and encouraged simpler styles of dress, but she did not just talk about what to wear or how to care for clothes. She wrote about things like good posture and presentation, making a less expensive dress appear to be more eye-catching. The use of the white wedding dress in the U.S. is often attributed to Goody's after the reporting of Queen Victoria's white dress when marrying Prince Albert. If you have a few minutes, I highly recommend checking out Accessible Archives. It's accessible-archives.com to look at some of the articles from Goodies. This is some really amusing reading. Many subjects were covered, from the lack of good domestic help in the U.S. to how to get a blood stain out of a dress and why little boys like April Fool's Day. This is one of my favorites. There are also articles about educating girls and how children need time to play outside. She really considered outdoor play a very important part of a child's education. So, like I said, a vast array of subjects. In addition to this, Hale believed women were able to raise money for causes far better than men were, and there was some evidence to back her up at the time. She also advocated the adoption of Thanksgiving as a national holiday. She began writing letters to Zachary Taylor in 1846 and continued with Millard Fillmore, Franklin Pierce, James Buchanan, and Abraham Lincoln for 17 years until Lincoln finally took what had been a New England celebration, with the states each taking their own day, and making it a nationally recognized holiday. This seems like an appropriate piece of historical information, considering this is the week of Thanksgiving. Hale spearheaded a craft fair of gargantuan proportions and eventually raised $30,000 for a Bunker Hill monument. So, as you can see, when Sarah wanted to get something done, she was pretty good at making it happen. And that brings us to our question in the title. Though Goodies was a force for its time, was it good enough for the progression of women during its period? I can only give my opinion, but I believe that the non-suffragist Sarah Hale probably got more done in the early 19th century to change the lives of women than those who were more forceful for change. It is my opinion that creating the idea that women have brains that could contribute to the good of humanity had to become an accepted idea before the vote or more equal rights were ever going to become a reality. Sarah changed what she knew could be changed and set the stage for those who came after her to influence the existence of women in the U.S. Now, this is not in any way, shape, or form to belittle the contributions of so many early suffragists of the day. Their work was very, very important. I just do believe that the work that women like Sarah Hale were doing really set the stage for their ideas to be adopted. Because, as we know, except for the Western states where they needed the numbers of women to vote, for citizenship, women were not going to be able to vote in national elections for many, many years to come. So, back to our topic here. She had a medium for influential content, and she used it for small changes instead of sweeping calls for radical change. Am I correct? We'll never know. However, I do know that I admire her for what she was able to accomplish in some fairly exceptional circumstances. Sarah retired from Goodies in 1877, December of 1877, and died 2 years later. Her years right before her retirement were not without controversy. There were some people who accused her of plagiarizing Mary Had a Little Lamb. However, most scholars agree that she was the actual author of the poem. Goodies was still published until 1898, but was never as successful as it was during the 50 years when Hale was the publisher. Sarah has a literary award named for her and is remembered in the Episcopal Church with a feast day. So thank you, Sarah, for using your talents to give us the ability to really appreciate April Fool's Day, to expect good articles in our magazines, and to stuff ourselves silly on the same day while giving thanks all over our nation. Always remember, you can email me at historieshotties@yahoo.com or visit our Facebook page if you have any questions or comments. So until next time.